important. You can shake it from today to tomorrow. The stain will not be removed. It needs a wash. It has to be. It has to go through a certain process where you place chemicals in order to remove the stain. So too, with one who is able to engage in the study of Torah, but occupies himself instead with idle chatter. Over here, we're not dealing with an Am Haaretz, with an ignoramus who doesn't have the ability to learn. Over here, we're dealing with someone who does have the ability to learn. So when now he engages in idle chatter, he is neglecting the obligation to study Torah. So true, these Dvarim B'Talim are not like scoffing or slander, which are inherently, essentially, from the three unclean clippers. But now the Dvarim B'Talim have become connected to the three unclean clippers. Because since over here there is the neglection of Torah study, the person has nullified through these words a mitzvah essay, a positive mitzvah to study Torah. So these words have become an instrument and a medium of bittul Torah, of neglection of Torah. They have become a facilitator of a bittul Torah experience. So they receive their vitality and energy now from the three unclean klippos. And the human being who was invested in these words becomes tainted with the shell of life, a shell that obscures and conceals the divine purpose. These words, have they been used in accordance with their divine purpose? On the contrary, they have been used in a manner that contradicts the divine will, that is antithetical to what Hashem wants from the human being. And they have been used in such a manner where the divine purpose cannot be realized, cannot be expressed, cannot come to the fore. Bittul Torah. So in this case, ein kafa kela levade, maya lenafshay, the kafa kela hollow of the sling experience alone cannot effectively help his soul. Lamar kol zachecha to scour and cleanse it. The kafa kela alone cannot effectively scour and cleanse his soul. Rak ein shem chamurim shemanishim al bittul teira bepratis. But it must receive the severe penalties which are meted out for neglect of the Torah in particular. Because just like our sages say, Talmud Torah keneged kula, the mitzvah of studying Torah in certain areas transcends all other mitzvahs, and hence the reward for it is extraordinary. The same is true in the other extreme. Milvat, a part of einish haklali l'chol bitul mitzvahs ase machmas atzlos. Apart from the general healing process, retribution or healing process, for the neglect of positive commandments through indolence, begehenim shel shelag, namely the purgatory of snow, kemivur b'makam acher, as explained elsewhere. In this case, where the human being has engaged in idle chatter, in a time when he could have learn Torah, so in addition to the healing process and retribution which he receives for neglecting the Torah, in addition to Kafakela, there is also a general retribution for the neglect of positive mitzvahs as a result of laziness, of atzlus, of indolence. And this is described as purgatory of the snow. Neglecting a positive commandment, omission, comes usually as a result of laziness, of general indolence. So the healing for this is Gehenim Shel Shelag, purgatory of snow. K'mavur b'makam acher, is explained elsewhere, refers to the Lakutei Torah of the Arizal in the beginning of this week's parsha. The Arizal explains that there are two types of purgatory. A purgatory of fire, Gehenim Shel Eish, and of snow, Gehenim Shel Shelag. These are two types of remedies to two distinct types of scars. When you're dealing with sins of commission, which were caused by the heat of passion, by the fact that the person was too passionate, by his lust, these sins are cleansed in a gehenim, in a stream, in a purgatory of fire. Because the healing process is always performed mida keneged mida, measure against measure. So the sin was performed through heat, through passion. So this healing process is also in a stream of fire. But those sins of omission, not of commission, of omission due to indolence, to coolness, to the reserve of the person, the lack of fervor, the lack of energy, the lack of zealousness, these are cleansed through a purgatory of snow. Want to finish the Perek? Okay, we'll finish the Perek. V'chein ha'esek v'chachmas omas ha'elam. Likewise, occupying oneself with the intellectual disciplines of the nations of the world, bichlal dvarim b'telim yechashiv le'inyan avayin b'tel Torah, is also included in the category of engaging in inconsequential matters insofar as the sin of neglecting the Torah is concerned. As is explained in the laws of Torah study. When someone occupies himself with the intellectual disciplines of the nations of the world, he is not occupying himself in something which is forbidden. It's not a forbidden substance. It's a neutral substance. Alter Rebbe says, however, that concerning the sin of neglecting Torah study, it is included in the category, the above-mentioned category of Dvarim B'Telem, of idle chatter. Although it's not idle, we're dealing with wisdom, with knowledge, with disciplines, but nevertheless concerning the sin of neglecting the Torah study, it's part of the general category of Dvarim B'Telem, of engaging in matters which are inconsequential. They have, in other words, the same status in relationship to learning Torah as idle chatter. And the footnote, the reference he gives is Hilchos Talmud Torah. The Alter Rebbe's first printed work was Hilchos Talmud Torah, the laws of Torah study, which was first published in Shklov in 1794 and subsequently incorporated in his Shulchan Aruch, in his monumental code of law. In Hilchos Talmud Torah, in the third chapter, beginning with the fifth halacha and further, the Alter Rebbe discusses that although the Jew has a mitzvah to learn Torah constantly, but for the sake of earning a livelihood and a sustenance to exist and survive, the Jew is permitted to cease, to stop learning, and to engage in what he needs in order to live. Aval dvarim b'teilim klalu klaloi. But to engage in words which are inconsequential, in idle chatter, absolutely not. And if he has done it, Alter Rebbe says, "Over be'esi, he transgresses a positive commandment." Shenemar v'dibarta bam v'loy b'dvarim b'teilim, as mentioned before in Krishna, you should speak of them and not dvarim b'teilim. The source is Yumid af yitesamid beis. And Alter Rebbe continues in Halacha Zayin, "V'loy b'dvarim b'teilim b'levad." This is not only said concerning dvarim b'teilim. Ela afilu b'chachmas ha'olam aser lasik. Even in the disciplines of the nations of the world, the Jew is not to engage. Shenemar again v'dibarta bom shaloi ta'arev imahem dvarim acher. You should speak of them, of words of Torah, and do not mix in any other things, again from Yuma. Hence, all which has been said above concerning the Jew who does engage in dvarim b'teilim, such type of dvarim b'teilim, which are forbidden because there is bittul Torah involved, this applies identically if the Jew engages in, occupies himself with studying the disciplines of the nations of the world. But over here he adds, "Va'oid zois yiseira tum asa shel chachmas ha'omais oivdi gilulim al tumas dvarim b'telim." Moreover, the impurity of the intellectual disciplines of the nations is greater than the impurity of idle speech. Concerning the concept of bittul Torah, of neglect of Torah, and the healing process as a result of that, it's just like idle speech. In both cases, the person was not allowed to engage in it because he has to study Torah. But in addition to that, there is a certain impurity that is introduced into the human being's soul through these intellectual disciplines, even more than through idle speech. The latter, idle speech, clothe and defile only the emotions which emanate from the holy element of ruach, of ear, within his divine soul. With what do they defile it? Bitumas klipas neiga shebidvarim betelem. With the impurity of klipas neiga contained in idle speech, habayim miyisoid haruach harasha beklipas zubenafshe abahamas kidaleil, which is derived from the evil element of ruach, of ear, which is one of the components of this klipa, of klipa neige in his animal soul, as mentioned above in chapter 1. In chapter 1, the Alter Rebbe said that the nefesh habahamis, the animalistic soul in man, comes from klipas neige, from the translucent shell. Why? Because the quest of this soul is self-enhancement, self-preservation. It's self-oriented, self-directed. It does not gravitate towards its divine source. It does not realize the true essence and significance of life. It's animalistic in the self, it's selfish, it's egotistical, and it evolves around the I and the ego. That's klipas neiga. It's a husk, it's a shell. It obscures the truth. Everything, including klipas neiga, consists of four elements: esh, ruach, mayim, afar, fire, ear, water, and earth. So the nefesh habahamas, which comes from klipas neiga, has certain characteristics that stem from the element of ear, and one of them he discussed in chapter 1 is the characteristics that it loves to talk dvarim b'talim. The animalistic soul loves engaging in inconsequential words and topics. It has a certain element of ear in it, which lack concrete substance and concrete substance in the physical sense. In the psychological sense, klipas neiga of the nefesh habahamas, the element of ruach, motivates and tempts the person to engage in talking for the sake of talking, about whatever it may be, without any deeper purpose, a hollow type of talking, devoid of true significance. The divine soul will never talk such words, because the divine soul is tuned with true purpose of existence. The animalistic soul, which is part of the shell and husk reality, expresses itself in words which are idle. It can chat about things which are absolutely insignificant and inconsequential. So when the human being engages in these dvarim b'talim, he impurifies and he defiles which element of the divine soul? The emotions which emanate from the holy element of ruach, of the divine soul. In other words, which part of the animal soul has been expressed in this act? It's ruach dynamic. It's emotional ruach dynamic. The divine soul, which is enclosed within the animal soul, and thus was also engaged in this act, as mentioned, they work as one unit. Which aspect of it was affected? It's ruach aspect. It's emotional aspect. But v'loy p'chines chabad shebenafshe. But idle speech does not defile the levels of Chabad, the intellectual faculties in his soul. May achar shem divrei shtus abeiros, for it's but words of foolishness and ignorance. Shegam hashaitim v'ameyaretz zichel muldabrikin, since even fools and ignoramuses can speak that way. These are not intellectual matters, so the intellect remains uninvolved and untainted. Not so in the case of the science of the wisdom of the nations, who malbishu metame pchinois chabad shebenafshei halikis betumas klipas neigish shebechachmas elu. Over here, one closes and defiles his divine soul's faculties of Chabad, of Chachma Bina Das, its cognitive intellectual faculties, with the impurity of the Klipas Nega contained in these sciences. Shenaflu Shama B'Shviras HaKelim Mipchinas Achirayim Shel Chachma D'Gdusha. They, the sciences, the wisdom of the nations, have fallen there in the realm of Klipas Nega through the shattering of the vessels out of the hinder part of Chachma of Holiness, ki yadua liyodichein, as is known to those familiar with Chachma Nistara, with the esoteric wisdom. We will not get into it at the moment, but what Alter Rebbe is saying is that the place that secular wisdom, the wisdom of the nations, holds in the overall scheme of reality is Klipas Noiga. Originally, its source is Chachma of Holiness, Chachma de Gdush. But in a process known in Kabbalah as the process of shattering of the vessels, the hind part of Chachma of Holiness has fallen. And from that fall has been crafted and molded a whole new type of wisdom, which is the secular wisdom, the wisdom of the nations. So the soul which is involved in studying these wisdoms becomes defiled and impurified with the klipas naiga that characterizes the nature and identity of these sciences. However, elaim kain eisais and kardim lachtichbe. Unless one employs them, these sciences, as a useful instrument, the hainu, as a means of earning a more affluent livelihood with which to be able to serve Hashem. So he's utilizing the sciences for a godly purpose. He should be able to earn an affluent livelihood. Why does he want to earn affluent livelihood? He should be able to serve Hashem. Oy, or unless he knows how to apply them, the science is la'avaydus Hashem ha'iluteras, in the service of Hashem, or to his better understanding of his Torah. In that case, he does not become defiled and tainted by the klipas naiga of this wisdom. On the contrary, he has now brought to light the true essence and purpose of these wisdoms, which is to serve the Creator, to mirror and reflect the godly reality. So either he uses it as a method for a livelihood to serve Hashem, or he knows how to use them themselves for Torah or for the service of Hashem. In that sense, he sanctifies them. He elevates it from the realm of Klipas Naiga to the realm of holiness. Which means, in other words, as follows. Klipa is the shell and the husk of our world which conceals the truth. The world is defined as Olam HaKlipah, as he said in the 6th chapter, because our world does not bespeak where it comes from, what its true vitality, purpose, significance, and role and destiny is. When one talks Dvarim B'Telem, you talk for the sake of talking, what is that? You have given validity to the klipa reality, to the husk, to the shell of existence. You have engaged in a dynamic which is obscuring the truth of everything in life, the truth of every phenomenon, of every reality, of every human being, and of every moment of life. But when you engage in idle chatter, which part of your personality has been involved in it? Your impulses, your instincts, your emotions. Since we're just dealing with idle chatter, which anyone can talk, which doesn't need toil of the brain, as he says, even a nut or a total ignoramus can engage in them. So yes, he has fallen prey to the klipa reality. But what part of him? What part of him has incorporated the klipa perspective, the klipa dynamic? his emotions, his ruach, as he says, the ear element of man's psyche. That element has fall prey to the shell of life. But when you're dealing with chachmas chitzayinis, when you're dealing with the wisdom of klippah, with the wisdom of the nations of the world, it's also part of the shell of life. But it's wisdom. There is knowledge. There is intelligence. There is an intellectual cognitive experience. And what type of intellectual experience is it? It's connected to the realm of klippah. Because the wisdom of the nations, whatever it may be, again, we're not talking about something evil. When the person engages in the wisdom of the nations, he is not engaged in something which is a issur, which is prohibited. That would be connected to the realm of shalosh klippos hatmeis. If you study something which is prohibited, idolatry, for example, that's connected to the realm of shalosh klippos hatmeis. That's where it receives its energy. Over here, you're dealing with something which is neutral. It's permitted. But nevertheless, it's connected to the realm of klipas nega, of the shell of life. Why? Because these sciences, whatever they may be, do not conspicuously and unequivocally bespeak their divine origin, their divine design, their divine essence. Do they declare the truth that ein eid milvadei, that there is him and there is none else beside him? The glove of secular sciences does not necessarily express the hand within the glove. Secular wisdom at best talks about the what. It never talks about the why. Secular wisdom per se does not portray its divine role, its godly purpose. When the Jew is learning Torah, which is divine wisdom, he is engaging his mind in an exercise of harmony with the divine reality. Every part of Torah, whether he's learning about law, about medicine in Torah, about astronomy, it's irrelevant, is connecting the human being to Hashem, is connecting the human being to the essence of his own reality, and to the true essence of reality in general, to the quintessence of existence. Because it's Torah. It's divine wisdom. But when you're dealing with the secular wisdoms of the nations of the world, it's not so. They conceal the cardinal truth of existence, that there is him and there's none else beside him. They do not declare it, they do not bespeak it. It is a shell and husk that conceals it. It is self-contained, self-oriented, self-directed, and it perpetuates the illusion of self-efficiency. So when you're dealing with dvarim b'teilim, with idle chatter, they're senseless. They do not have a deeper content. They do not have intellectual content. So which dynamic is taking over the person? Which concealing dynamic? Huh? Ruach. So true, he has been invested in the klippah realm. But nevertheless, his emotions, his instincts, his impulses. But over here, you're dealing with something of seichel, of the mind, of intellectualism. It has content. So you're giving an intellectual justification to the concealment. Over here, a person's mind is affected. The person's perspective and philosophy becomes tainted with the falsehood of klipas neiga, with the concealment which klipas neiga represents. The intellectual cognitive perspective of the Jew has become tainted. What it does is it desensitizes the mind of the Jew to be receptive to the truth of existence, that there is him and there's none else beside him. So the mind becomes tainted by the subjectivity, by the sense of self-sufficiency of klippah. Hence, it cannot be so receptive to the truth of existence. Learning Torah, again, is divine wisdom. Learning Torah, every word of Torah, unequivocally, absolutely, and conspicuously, bespeaks the truth of life, the truth of significance, the truth of reality. So the human being that way, when he's learning Torah, he's connecting to that truth. But Chachmas Umas HaElam do not. They belong to the realm of Klippah. That's what klipa is all about. So when the Jew engages in it, it becomes an intellectual exercise. The mind has now been affected in a very profound and sensible way with the shell of life. The mind has now been robbed in a certain way from being receptive to its own truth and to the ultimate truth of existence, which is Ein Eid Mulvadi, there is him and there's none else beside him. But this is only if the person succumbs to the shell of the wisdom. But the truth is that secular wisdom is also part of the whole world on which we say that there is him and there's none else beside him. Secular wisdom is also, its whole reality is to mirror and reflect the harmony and the absoluteness of Hashem. This also, like everything, was created for the glory of Hashem. And since it's klipas noiga, it's not shalosh klipas atmeis, it can be revealed in the wisdom. It can be brought out. It can be expressed. It can be utilized in accordance with its divine quintessential quality and purpose. So therefore, if the person utilizes it in such a way, in other words, he does not fall prey to the shell dynamic of it, but rather he utilizes it in accordance with its divine essence and purpose, not only does he not contaminate his mind, not only does his mind not fall hostage and prey to the shell of life, on the contrary, he has sanctified the klipa reality and has elevated to the realm of the godly. He has utilized it in accordance with its quintessential self, purpose and substance. How do our sages say at the conclusion of Pirkei Avos? Whatever Hashem created in His world, He has not created but to express His glory. The same is true about every science, about every wisdom. And since it's klipas naiga, it's a translucent shell, it can be penetrated, it can be revealed. And generally, the Alter Rebbe gives two methods to do it. One method is if a person employs them as a useful instrument to earn a more affluent livelihood. And the purpose of earning the livelihood is to serve Hashem properly, to live and to fulfill your purpose while you were created. So then they have become an instrument an instrument to serve the divine purpose. Another method is even more than that. If he knows how to use the sciences themselves for the service of Hashem or for his Torah, which is similar to the two examples he gave about sanctifying food, if you remember in chapter 7. A, if you eat in order to have energy to serve Hashem, which is similar to the first example, you use the wisdom in order to earn a livelihood to serve Hashem, or if you eat the food on Shabbos in order to perform the mitzvah of Einik Shabbos, of having the line on Shabbos. Over here, the food is not only used as an instrument which will fuel you to serve Hashem later. The food itself becomes part of a mitzvah. And the same two examples he gives here. Either you use the wisdom as an instrument to earn a living and then you'll be able to serve Hashem, but the wisdom itself is not part of that reality of godliness. It's just a preparation for it, a facilitator of it. Or furthermore, you know how to use that itself for the service of Hashem and for His Torah. For example, the Rambam, in the beginning of Yesod HaTorah, the beginning of the second chapter, discusses how understanding physics, how understanding the science of our world reality, the physics of our world, brings a person to recognize and appreciate in much more depth the reality of the Creator, and evokes within them a profound depth of love and awe. So that very science, the very physics that the person has incorporated into his mind, he has utilized for a deeper service of Hashem. The same is true concerning Torah. If one studies, for example, astronomy or mathematics in order to understand the laws of Kiddush HaChodesh, of the sanctification of the new moon, which the study of astronomy is crucial for that, what happens was he has utilized the secular wisdom for Torah. Or the Gemara tells the story in Sanhedrin Daf Hey that Rav once said that I spent 18 months by a shepherd of animals in order to find out and to learn which blemishes are passing blemishes and which blemishes are permanent blemishes that cannot be removed. So we studied the anatomy of animals, which is a field of wisdom, in order to understand the laws, which are very integral to all the laws of karbanos and offerings, what type of blemish in an animal is a mum oiver, a passing one, and a mum kavua, a permanent one. Or someone studies electricity to be able to know the laws of Shabbos in modern day age, how they are applicable to the realities of electricity, etc., etc. One second. What? Over here is the difference. When he's talking over here about chachmas ha'umayis, he's not talking about forbidden chachmas. There's a big difference. You have chachmas that are forbidden. For example, stunning avodah zarah. Stunning things of idolatry are forbidden. These wisdoms, receive their vitality and energy not from klipas naiga, from shalish klipas atmeis. Because over here there is a husk and a shell that absolutely obscures the inner divine essence and significance. Yeah, intellect also has energy. No, for sure. The pa'ula of, you're asking if I mean the intellect or the pa'ula. The pa'ula of Avodah Zarah is for sure from shalish klipas atmeis. But I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the wisdom of it, the science of it. The energy of that science is shalish klipas atmeis. Look in Rambam, Hilchos Avodah Zarah, it's forbidden to learn it. It's forbidden to study it. Besides in extreme cases, Beis Din, for example, the Jewish Supreme Court was obligated to study the sciences of idolatry of that age. Why? Because they had to know what Avodah Zarah is. If someone engages in it, they had to know what it is. The same is true, they had to know all the different types of kishuf, the magical type of realities, which is also from Shalosh Klipas HaTmeis. So when they learn these things, by them it's not Shalosh Klipas HaTmeis. They're learning it because the Torah has told them to learn it. So by them learning it is a mitzvah. So they actually elevate the energy of the Avodah Zarah that they learn, of the wisdom into Kedusha, the wisdom that they're learning. Because by them it has become an instrument for serving the divine purpose. Similar to a Baal Tshuva in Perek Zion, who transforms premeditated sins into merits, and the premeditated sins of Kol HaKedushin HaTmeis become an instrument for holiness, and their sparks are elevated. And Alter Rebbe explained why. Because the sins themselves have fueled a new type of love and energy that the Baal Tshuva, the returnee, would have never experienced otherwise. But besides that, besides Beis Din, where there is no mitzvah, Avodah Zarah and such things are from Shalosh Klipas HaTmeis. Over here he's talking about Chachmas HaUmos, which means sciences of the nations, which are neutral. Nevertheless, they're neutral, but neutral is Klippa. One cannot say, for example, listen, I'm not Kedusha, but I'm not Kedusha. I'm not antithesis to Kedusha. If something is not Kedusha, it's a battle with Kedusha. Because Kedusha, Godliness is all-pervading. Everything is part of that dynamic. There's him and there's none else beside him. Einayt mulvada. What does it mean, none else beside him? That everything ultimately has a divine essence, and its purpose is to serve the divine creator. So a sense of a neutral dynamic is already a clip. It's a shell which conceals holiness, which obscures holiness. But it's klipas naiga. As mentioned, the secular wisdom of the nation do not bespeak a divine essence, a divine purpose. So the human being who engages in them is tainting his mind with the reality of klippa, with the reality of the shell, and it's an intellectual experience. So your mind, your perspective, becomes a klippa type of perspective. And the real purpose of man is that his perspective should not become hostage to the shell of life. That his perspective should be healthy, really healthy and objective and true. His perspective should always be clear and in touch with the truth of life. But over here, the person defiles his perspective, his outlook, his general view. His glasses have become tainted now. He sees the world from a klipa perspective. And in that sense, it's deeper and worse than Dvarim B'Teilim. Over there, your emotions have been affected. But emotions and impulses and instincts are not what define your philosophy and your perspective. Chachma, wisdom, is the way you think, the way you look at things. It's your idealism. Through Chachma Yisra'umayz, the Alter Rebbe says, your idealism has become affected. Has become tainted. Okay.
Even plain mathematics doesn't want to use infinity at a higher level of basis.
Yeah. Let us conclude with the final words of this chapter in Tanya. The Rebbe continues and concludes, Zehu taimei shel harambam v'rambanzal v'siyason she'asku behem. This is the reason why the Rambam Maimonides and the Ramban Nachmanides of blessed memory and their peers engaged in them in the wisdoms of the world, since they, the Rambam and the Ramban and their peers, were able to utilize this knowledge in the service of Hashem and of His Torah. The Rambam and the Ramban, Rabbeinu Moshe ben Maimon, the Rambam, and Rabbeinu Moshe ben Nachman, the Ramban, the two illustrious sons of Spanish Jewry, who have become immortal figures in the history of our people, were not just giants of giants in their Torah knowledge, but have also mastered in an extraordinary fashion the sciences and various branches of wisdom of their time. They were both men of many-sided education, possessing an amazing wide knowledge in general scholarship of the era. Both Nachmanides as well as Maimonides were renowned physicians, master philosophers, mathematicians, astronomers, and so forth. You know when the Rambam lived? When the Ramban lived? The Rambam lived from the year 1135 till the year 1204. He was born in Spain, passed away in Egypt, and he was interred in Tiberia and Tiberias. The Ramban lived more than a half a century later after the Rambam, approximately from the year 1194 till the year 1270. He was also born in Spain, and later he relocated to the Holy Land, and that's where he passed away. Neither of them, nor the Rambam or the Ramban, engaged in these studies, at least initially, due to financial considerations alone, lasseis eisen kardum lachtich ben, in the terminology of the Alter Rebbe, using them as a means to earn an affluent livelihood. The Rambam, as we know from his own history, which he himself transcribed this point, was initially in his younger years supported by a wealthy brother, Reb David, who supported him and his family. Reb David was an extremely wealthy Jew, and the Rambam can totally engage in Torah study. And nevertheless, at that time, he also mastered many of the sciences of the time. It's only later, when Reb David drowned, when the Rambam ultimately had to find his own means to earn a livelihood, and that's when he became a doctor and a physician. He used his unbelievable, extraordinary knowledge in medicine to become a very powerful and famous doctor and physician. The same is true concerning the Ramban. Although he was a renowned physician in Spain and did earn a livelihood from it, he knew and he mastered and he engaged and learned many other disciplines, sciences and branches of wisdom of the world, which were not connected to his source of livelihood. So the ideas that the Alter Rebbe is saying, v'zehu taimei shel haramba, the second method which the Alter Rebbe tells us, that someone who knows how to apply them in the service of Hashem and Torah may engage in their study, this is the reason that the Rambam, the Ramban, and their peers, many other great Jews, great spiritual giants, have engaged in these studies because these people were so in tune with the real energy of life that these studies did not serve as a trap which can distance them from the spiritual soul of the universe, but on the contrary, they perceive these wisdoms as instruments, as vehicles to express godliness in an even more powerful way, and as an instrument to enhance their understanding and appreciation of Torah. So in the case of the Rambam, the Ramban, and the like, men of real spiritual stature, these wisdoms did not become a klipa, covering up, obscuring, concealing their inner godly quality and essence, but rather they were utilized in accordance with their true function, with their true design and purpose, namely, to reflect the harmony, the goodness, the holiness, and the wisdom of their Creator. So the Rambam and the Ramban were prototype of men. Sheyadu liyishtamish behen la'avodas Hashem l'teirasei, knowing how to apply the wisdom which they studied to the service of Hashem and to His Torah. In the early 1950s, a couple, and their young daughter had a private audience with the Rebbe. After the husband and the wife had consulted with the Rebbe on various issues that were perturbing them, the Rebbe turned to the 6-year-old girl and he asked if she had any questions. She began to speak, and she started to ask many questions that 6-year-old children ask. And the parents felt embarrassed. They tried to quiet her as she began to speak, because they didn't want to take up the Rebbe's valuable time with dilemmas and questions and issues that are bothering a 6-year-old girl. But the Rebbe encouraged her to go ahead. The little girl, with a concerned look on her face, asks the Rebbe, "What do you think about atomic energy? Is it good or is it bad?" The Rebbe gazes at the girl and he says, "Tell me, in your kitchen at home there's a knife. Is the knife good or bad?" So the girl begins thinking and contemplating, "Hey, it's a good question. Is a knife good or bad?" And then she replies and she says, "It depends what it's used for. If it's used to cut food, it's good. If it's used to hurt someone, it's bad." The Rebbe smiled. He said, "That's exactly the true answer. The same is true about atomic energy or any other technology that man has developed. If it's used for a productive purpose, to help our civilization, to help the world, to help humanity, it's good. If it's used for harmful purposes, it's bad." And the same as this is true concerning the technology that has been developed, the same is true concerning the wisdom that gave birth to all of these human developments. They can be used in accordance with their shell, namely, as sciences which perpetuate the illusion of a self-centered, self-sufficient, and arbitrary universe. And thus, if they are used in that way, if they are appreciated merely from their shell perspective, from their concealing factor, they thus defile the sensitive nature of the transcendental soul of man which is engaging them. They defile him, they desensitize him with their egotistic characteristics and features and qualities and so forth. But these very wisdoms can also be utilized and can also be appreciated in accordance with their inner holy content and design, as vehicles to project and express the harmony and the spirituality of the universe and of man. And by the way, in Chassidus, it says elsewhere that now as the world comes closer and closer to the time of Mashiach, the klipa that characterizes the secular sciences, which are part of the realm of klipas noig, as explained before, this klipa becomes, with each passing day, so much more and more translucent and transparent, reflecting more and more the inner spiritual and divine forces that govern our world, the microcosm as well as the macrocosm. Yeah.
The Torah tells us that about Kiddush HaKadosh, you need astronomy for Kiddush HaKadosh. Or if we're not bringing it up, then you have to be doctors. You can study together. What's the other level? Our time is in the Gemara.
Yes. Okay, you're asking that it seems that the Alter Rebbe finds it necessary to justify the behavior and the Rambam and the Ramban, why they engaged in these studies. And you're saying the Torah itself dictates us to engage in these types of studies. For example, you mentioned a few important cases. There's a mitzvah, the Gemara says in Shabbos, there's a mitzvah, l'chashiv tkufos ha'mazalos, to study astronomy and to make the appropriate calculations in astronomy in order to create the Jewish calendar, which is based on the Jewish calendar is a lunar calendar based on the moon, and therefore there has to be profound knowledge in the cycles of the moon, and certain elements of the calendars are connected to the solar system and so forth. So there's a mitzvah, at least there's a debate on who the mitzvah is, but at least on Bezin, on the Jewish court, there's a mitzvah that they should master the science of astronomy. Or there's an obligation in the Torah on a Jewish city to employ a doctor. The Torah tells us, v'rapa y'rapa, the doctor has permission from Hashem to heal, and so forth. The Gemara is replete with episodes of many Tanoim and Amirayim who engage themselves in various studies. It's a wonderful question. The answer briefly is as follows. There is the case where the Torah specifically commands the Jew to engage in secular studies. For example, the mitzvah on the Jewish court to study astronomy so that they can make the required calculations for creating the Jewish calendar, each chodesh, the new month, and so forth. That was a commandment of the Torah. That is a commandment of the Torah. There is another case where the Torah doesn't command the Jew to study, but he nevertheless engages in it because there is something in Torah which he cannot comprehend and understand, and therefore he must go research and learn about a specific field so that he should be able to understand this issue in Torah. As in the example of Rav I gave earlier, the Gemara in Sanhedrin. He went to a shepherd so that he could properly master the Torah's laws of mumim, of blemishes. He would not be able to truly comprehend and have in his mind in a crystallized fashion the difference of a mum oivir and a mum kavua and what it is and all the details if he wouldn't have gone and studied the anatomy of animals and if he had to go to a shepherd. What the Alter Rebbe is telling us here is even more than this. Note the meticulousness and the precision of his choice of words. He knows how to use them in the service of Hashem and His Torah. He knows how to use them. There is a certain knowledge that is required. He should know how to use them. Because what Alter Rebbe is telling us here is even more. Even in the case where it's not a direct mitzvah, even in the case where there is not a Torah issue at hand which needs to be explained and answered, it is just that we are dealing with a type of human being who knows how to utilize these studies for the sake of godliness and Torah, then his studying of these wisdoms is not a subordination on his part to the klipa, but rather a sublimation of the klipa. His soul is not falling prey to the shell and opaqueness of the klipa. On the contrary, he is sublimating the klipa. But again, this requires the knowledge that the learner is capable of doing this. And when the learner is capable of doing this, he can engage in these studies. And this was unique about the Rambam, the Ramban, and their peers. Here the Alter Rebbe has an example. These are not the only examples, but these are primary examples for human beings who engaged in these studies, not only because of the above-mentioned requirements and necessities, but rather their stature and their personality. Their stature and their personality were of such, sheyadu lishtamish ben l'teirasa l'avidasa. Yes? Mm-hmm. Okay, you're saying that concerning Chibut HaKever, purgatory of the grave, which we spoke about before, we read somewhere that the neshama feels the process of Chibut HaKever. So therefore, people were discussing before, the body doesn't feel anything, so what's the use? So you're saying even though the body doesn't feel anymore, the soul is deeply affected by it, because the soul does retain some connection to its former body. And the soul is very, very conscious even after life. Obviously, the soul never dies. So therefore, Chibut HaKever is a cleansing procedure for the human soul, which senses the pain and the experience of Chibut HaKever. Good, that is correct, 100%. Thank you. Yes? Ah. A tongue. Okay. You checked up the story that I said last week concerning Reb Shmuel Munkus with the beef that was brought in the middle of a Hasidic gathering. It was not a lung, it was a tongue. Okay, I don't remember what I said, but I stand corrected. A tongue, not a lung. The bottom line was that it was a tempting chunk of beef. Yes. Have a wonderful week.
Rabbi Jacobson delivers this weekly class on the Tanya each Sunday morning at Heichal Menachem in the Borough Park section of Brooklyn, New York. To order additional tapes or to receive the tapes weekly by mail, please call Heichal Menachem at 718-633-1076.